Well, we are in the first Sunday of Lent for 2020. And so one quick thing about the baptism. There aren't that many rituals that we practice that get our faith into our bodies. So most bad religion or unhealthy religion comes through our head. And so we actually need these rituals to get it into our body. And baptism is one of those. And so death and resurrection, or death to more life, is the pattern of transformation. And so if any of you are just interested in practicing that and embodying that, you can talk to any of us. And so that'll be the first Sunday of May. And so on this first Sunday of the Lenten season, we invite you into 40 days of bringing the weight of the shame that we carry into the magnitude of God's mercy. Our shame that feels so heavy and so big, but in comparison to how big mercy is, we need 40 days, year after year, to remember that. Because if you're like me, by the time Lent rolls around, the story of being loved is kind of forgotten, and I'm starting to live out stories of shame. The stories of living out of love, for me, are forgotten. And I find myself living stories of being loved. And so we have 40 days to kind of reset and just engage our shame, which feels big, but it's not that big, and the magnitude of mercy. And so this morning I wanted to start with a question. It's a pretty easy question. Think of something you've forgotten recently. Okay? Could be like your keys, could be an appointment. Could be your child. Okay. All right. Just turn to a neighbor, something you've forgotten. I'll give you a couple minutes. All right. Just a quick show of hands. On the spectrum of like being more forgetful, who tends to be more of a forgetful person? Yeah, that's totally me. And then of the people who we don't like you, but you don't forget things, how many of those? Okay, some of you. So forgetting things is kind of my main move. I'm very good at it. I call it the cerebral curse. I'm so cerebral. I'm so in my head with these lofty ideas and dreams. The day-to-day details of life are easily forgotten. So I went to see a show in Portland about 10 years ago. I went to see Sigur Rós. And went with some friends, and we've definitely seen shows with these friends before. And on multiple occasions, I've definitely forgotten my ticket. So since we were flying across the country, the whole theme was, every time we saw each other, we're going to Portland, don't forget your ticket. I was like, okay, okay, right? We're going next week, don't forget your ticket. Okay, okay. So we get to the airport, we show up, got our bags. They're like, did you remember your ticket? I was like, I got my ticket. And they're like, good job, Gideon. Like a toddler who remembers to go potty. They're like, oh, well done. So we get to Portland, and we have a lovely time. We spend time in the Pacific Northwest, and we're like hiking, eating at nice restaurants. I have some pictures here. And so the last day, we go to the show. So we stay at the Ace Hotel. We have a lovely dinner, and then the venue is about a mile away. So it was an October evening in Portland, just lovely and cool and crisp. So as we're walking, just like casually, probably takes half an hour, we turn the corner and we see the lights to this concert hall. You can hear the buzz of the crowd, right? I can almost hear Yonzi's falsetto in my head. We're like, ah, it's almost there. So we get in line. I'm standing in line. And then I see the woman in front of me, really excited. And she's waving her tickets. I reach into my pocket. No tickets. I smile. My friends look at me. They're like, no, you didn't. I was like, I did. They're like, you did not. I was like, I did. So it wasn't a big deal. I run a mile back to the hotel, run a mile back, and then I see the show. The whole goal of this trip was for me to not forget the tickets, and I found a way to forget the tickets. I'm very good at it. I've forgotten many things in life. I forgot to go to a Chappelle show that I had tickets to. Just forgot to go. On a recent camping trip, I forgot where I put my boots the night before. So I spent the morning like, my boots. Just like couldn't find my boots. My friend comes up to me. He's like, is this because you're old? I go, it's certainly not helping. In our psalm this morning, the psalmist says this. Bless the Lord, O my soul. Do not forget all of his goodness. The amount of God's goodness. Don't forget. Don't forget. Maybe as we go into this Lenten season, we can ask this. What have we forgotten about God's goodness? The amount of goodness that's available to us. What have we forgotten? What have we forgotten about steadfast love? Love that's so steady, so consistent. So reliable. Have we forgotten? What have we forgotten about the magnitude of God's mercy? The size and the scale of it. Our shame that feels overwhelming. And just to step into mercy that continues day after day. That's new every morning. And so as we enter into these 40 days, we can ask it conversely like this. In these 40 days of Lent, what do we need to remember each morning, each day? So we pick it up in verse 1, and the psalmist says this, bless the Lord, O my soul, all that is within me. Bless his holy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul. Do not forget all of his goodness. Don't forget. Don't forget. So what is this goodness? He forgives all your iniquity, all of it. He heals all your diseases. Who redeems your life from the pit. So the word iniquity there, I think, is interesting. It's actually guilt. So it's not the mistake. It's the emotion from the mistake. And guilt is actually a healthy emotion. But if you're like me, I think universally what happens. So you make a mistake. You have that initial feeling, which is a good thing. It's a healthy thing. But then we start telling that story over and over. Then we start embodying that, and it turns into a disease of shame. And we start carrying it. Instead of the mistake, we made a mistake. We become the mistake. And we start telling these stories, and it's like we dig this shame pit. We're like, why did I? What's wrong with me? Again, before we know it, we're in this shame pit, and the psalmist says God comes into this pit and redeems us. So what's a mistake you've made recently? Doesn't have to be big. Just like, oops, right? That initial, that's good. Then do you find yourself telling that story again? Just replaying it? And then it becomes this toxic disease of shame. And before we know it, we're kind of like, how did I get this deep into this pit of shame? So I'll tell you one of my stories. I was at Flat Track Coffee 3 weeks ago. I go there often. It's attached to a bike shop. So when I'm there, I'll run into bike acquaintances. Oftentimes, I don't want to talk to people during the day. So I'll just grab a coffee, kind of wave, and disappear. On this day, I wanted to treat myself, so I got myself an oat milk cortado, right? But I ordered it, and I was like, oh no, I have to wait in line. So you order, and then you come to the side of the bar, and then on this side of the bar were two, like, people I know, should know their names. I've met them, I've talked to them before, right? So I'm waiting in line, they're like right here, so I have to say hi. I'm like, hey Aaron, how's it going? So I hug Aaron. And then beside Aaron is his friend, who I've talked to her multiple occasions. So I come in, I give Aaron a hug, I come in for a side hug. I was like, what's up, Vanessa? So I hug her, her back's facing me. I'm trying to give her a side back gentle hug. She doesn't respond because her name's not Vanessa. She feels someone touch her shoulder, so she turns around, and I end up giving her like an awkward front-facing neck hug. And she goes, what did you say? I was like, hey, she goes, what's my name? I was like, she goes, Veronica. I was like, hi, Veronica. I'd like that cortado to go, please. So on the scale of mistakes, really not a big deal, right? I said the name of an acquaintance wrong. I had the first letter correct. It's pretty good, actually. So it should have just been like, oops. But instead, blood rushes to my face. I go into my van. I'm like, ah, oh, that was so embarrassing. What's wrong with me? Start digging, right? Ah, oh, why did I? Oh, I'm so bad at why I keep forgetting, right? Just start digging. That was 3 weeks ago. I guarantee she hasn't thought about it once. I think about it 3 times a week. And I'm in this shame pit. And this text says God comes into this pit and crowns us with steadfast love and mercy. We're like, oh, God, steadfast love. Oh, God, mercy. Gregory Boyle says it like this. The God who is greater than God has only one thing on her mind. That is to endlessly drop rose petals on our heads. Dropping rose petals of love, rose petals of mercy. Mercy, love. Behold the one who can't take his eyes off of you. Marinate in the vastness of that, the scale of that. And so I need 40 days every year because I forget. I need to remember those rose petals that are falling on my head. And so maybe a spiritual practice for us in this Lenten season. Maybe we can marinate in the vastness of mercy. Later in this text, it says that God's love is as high as the heavens are above the earth. How high is that? God's mercy is as far as the east is from the west. How far is that? So let's try this. Where's the farthest place you've ever been on earth? For me, Australia, pretty far. Okay, so we're going to do this. We're going to take our shame. We're going to put it in a bag. We're going on a trip around the world. Cool? All right. You want to come with me to Australia? All right. We're all going to Australia. Okay. So think of the mistake you made, the initial motion, and then what that shame feels like. Okay. So let's put it in a bag. I'm going to put mine in a tote bag. Okay. You got yours in a bag? All right. Calling an Uber. We're all going to the airport. Okay. Be kind of fun if we all went to the airport in an Uber, right? So we're driving down 193, we're like, ah, oh, construction, ah, right? We all get to the airport, we go through the security, we remember our passports, we're all like waiting. We're going to fill the plane, probably. Like, we got the whole plane, it's going to be awesome. So our first leg, we're going to LAX, like, not too bad, right? Kind of a shortish flight. You guys with me? We land in LAX, we're all kind of excited, we're going to Australia, right? Grab a coffee. Now we have to psych ourselves up. This is the long leg. We're going to have a layover to Tokyo now, okay? So we get our eye patch and our neck pillows, right? We're giving each other massages, start binging some movies. We drink some boozy drinks because it's an international flight, right? Hopefully we sleep very well, all right? We wake up. It's been a long flight. We're stretching. We're in Tokyo, right? We get out of the airport in Tokyo. There's still 10 more hours. Australia is super far away, right? So we get like a nice sushi meal. We're like, okay, last leg, 10 hours. We got this. So we've traveled for 30 hours across the world. We get to Australia. We get out of the airport. And it's kind of like Canada with different accents. It's not that different. But we're all there. So there's one place in Melbourne that I visited that was magical. I was on this hike outside of Melbourne. And a koala in the wild climbed down a tree. Just started walking in front of me. I was like, there's a koala. We need to hug the koala. And my friend's like, don't hug the koala. The koala will maul you. I was like, if the koala mauled me, it would be such an honor. It'd be thank you. So I want to put my shame bag on the koala. So imagine, we're just in this forest. Eucalyptus trees, koala bears everywhere. Now take your shame bag. Put it around the koala's neck. He's going to climb up a tree with your shame. And we fly all the way back home. As far as the east is from the west, that's the vastness of mercy. And I think I need a lifetime of 40 days to scratch the surface of the scale of the vastness of God's mercy. And what if we in this Lenten season just marinate on that, sit in that? Verse 5. God's goodness, remember all of his goodness, that satisfies you with good as long as you live. That you get satisfied with goodness. And you're so satisfied, your youth is renewed like the eagle. Like your life feels a little lighter. Like you're flying almost. When was the last time someone gave you goodness that met a need of yours? We have these basic human needs that are really necessary. Are we worthy to have those needs met? Are we worthy to be loved? To be known? To be comforted? To be trusted? To be understood? To be celebrated? Do we trust that God's goodness wants to satisfy us? Do we trust we're worthy of that? One of the ways this shows up for me recently, I'm practicing being better at my birthday. I'm not good at it. So I've hired a birthday coach. Her name is Claudia Harding. Here's a picture of Claudia celebrating one of the 30 days she's going to celebrate. Is she here? Yeah, okay, there she is. If you want a birthday coach, she's for hire, right? She's like, you need to celebrate, not just one day, not just a week, 30 days, it's your birthday. I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to try one day. So on my birthday, I was like, I'm just going to practice receiving. Whatever comes, I'm just going to say thank you. So on my birthday, I took a birthday trip. I went to Tucson to go bike camping, which is my happy place. So on the way there, we were going to camp in Marfa and then stay in El Paso. 2 days before going to Marfa, I looked up the weather and it was going to be 18 degrees. And I was like, camping in 18 degrees? No, thank you, right? So I have a friend who owns a home there. I texted him. I was like, hey, can I rent your place? And he's like, I'm going to be there. Just come. I'm like, okay, perfect. So we're driving to Marfa. I get to Alpine and I text him. I was like, hey, thanks for letting us stay at your place. I'd love to take you out for dinner. What are you in the mood for? And he texts back, I've got a spread at my place. Just come and eat. I was like, okay. So I show up. And it was his birthday. Yeah. He had a chef there. He had a guy who owned a brewery. The editor at large for Bon Appetit was there. We had a wonderful evening. There was a spread. I think there's some pictures. We were like grilling over the fire. My friend's opening a mezcal distillery in Marfa. There was a mezcal buffet. Yeah, lovely. So the next day, which was my birthday, I woke up, went to Chinati Foundation, which I love. And I felt like God gave me two gifts. I know I'm totally projecting, but it feels like God gave me two gifts. So I'm at the foundation. You can go to the next slide. This giant tumbleweed just comes floating at me. I'm like, God, is this my birthday gift? Thank you, right? So I'm like, I am taking that bad boy home. So I took it. I'm trying to drag this thing. There's like 30 mile an hour winds. It felt like a parachute. Like, I was like, I finally get to my van and it didn't fit. I was like, no, God's teaching me to be not attached to my gifts. That's good. Then I went into the Donald Judd installation. You got the next slide. So it's in the aluminum boxes. You guys have been there. We spent like an hour in there. So there's like a glass wall that goes from floor to ceiling. So I'm shooting this from the outside, but I'm on the inside of this. And at one point, a roadrunner walks up to the window and is like right there. But because of the glass, the roadrunner can't see me. So I kneel down. The roadrunner's like staring me in the face. I'm like, hey, buddy, it's my birthday. And so I'm just walking along. Like for maybe 20 seconds, we just go for a stroll. The roadrunner's right here. It was amazing. I was like, oh, God, thank you. And then later that night, we go to my friend's in-law's place in El Paso. And they weren't there, but they stocked the fridge with like Brussels sprouts and steaks, and there's like wine and whiskey. And so my friend takes out the Brussels sprouts, starts cooking, and starts grilling the steaks. I'm like, hey, let me help cook. He's like, no, sit down. It's your birthday. I'm cooking for you. It's your birthday. I was like, oh, okay. Did not receive that. Just really awkward. Had a lovely dinner. And I grew up just thinking I had to earn all my goodness. So I was like, all right, thanks for the cooking dinner. It was lovely. I'm going to do dishes. I'm doing all dishes. He goes, sit down. It is your birthday. You are not doing dishes. I'm glad you were born. I'm happy to do this. And it made me tear up. I was really moved. And I was like, thanks, man. And I sat with that. There's a part of me deep down that doesn't think I'm deserving of goodness or even kindness. If I'm really honest, there's a part of me that doesn't feel like I'm worthy to be celebrated even on my birthday. And I'm learning to receive that. One theologian says it like this: every child, every person needs to know that they are a source of joy. Every child, every person needs to be celebrated. To reveal someone's beauty is to reveal their value by giving them time, attention, and tenderness. To love is not just to do something for them, but to reveal to them their own uniqueness, to tell them they are special and worthy of attention. So my friend who gave me that gift, so we're pretty close. I would say this to his face. In all honesty, he's actually not that nice of a guy. He's kind of a hard ass. Like, he grew up in a hard environment. He's like he's a bike messenger, he's a firefighter, so he's just kind of gruff. But he was able to give that gift to me. And somehow it's harder for me to imagine him giving it to me than God. That all of God's goodness is longing. That surely goodness and mercy will follow you the rest of your life. Do we have the faith to receive that? To trust that? And each year, 40 days, so we don't forget. And when we forget, we remember again and again. Verse 6. The Lord works vindication and justice for all who are oppressed. What parts of us are oppressed as we enter into this Lenten season? What hurt are we carrying into this season? What are the ways we've been misunderstood? And as we bring this into this season, do we trust that God's on our side? Do we trust that God sees our pain? It actually understands our pain? I watched the most devastatingly gorgeous film last week. Some of you might have seen it. Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Has anyone seen it? It's so devastating and sad and gorgeous and maybe the most romantic movie I've ever seen. Maybe. So this is the premise. There's a woman who's basically an object, and she's supposed to be in an arranged marriage and sent off to some dude. And so in order for her to be arranged, someone has to paint her portrait. They send the portrait to the dude, and then she's shipped off like cargo, right? So in the movie, she's angry, she's not seen, she's not understood. She keeps rejecting all the people who do her portraits because she doesn't want her portrait taken. She doesn't want to get sent off. And then finally her mother hires someone who's not supposed to be painting her portrait. It's supposed to be her friend, her companion, to walk with her. But she's supposed to be observing her and painting her in secret. And eventually they fall in love, and it's beautiful. So I heard an interview with the woman who plays the muse, the person who's blonde. So you can go to the next slide. Go to the next one. So the woman who's staring at us, she said that she wanted to play her character as an object who's over the film, over time, is loved into a subject. She wanted to play someone who had the love, the gaze of love, love her to life. I thought that was beautiful. And so she had all this anger. No one understood where she was coming from. And then someone finally saw her and understood her and loved her. And perhaps in this season of Lent, we need to remember God's loving gaze that frees us from the world who objectifies us and who loves us into ourselves as a child of God. What would that be like? Irving Feldman says it like this: how wonderful to be understood. Just to sit here while some kind person relieves you of the awful burden of having to explain yourself, of having to find the words to say what you meant or what you think you thought you meant, and of the worst burden of finding no words, of being struck dumb because some bright person has found just the right words for you, and you only have to sit here and be grateful. For words so quiet, so discerning, they seem not words, but literate light, in which you merely lucid blossoming grows lustrous. How wonderful that is. And when we receive that, then we have the strength to experience the opposite. How altogether wonderful it is not to be understood. Not at all. To, well, just sit here while someone not unkindly is saying those impossibly wrong things. Or possibly they're the right things. If you are, which you're not, that someone, a difference finally so indifferent, it would be conceit not to let it pass. Unkindness, really, to spoil someone's fun. And so you don't mind. You welcome the umbrage of those high murmurings over your head, having found, after all, you are grateful. And to understand this, how wonderful, that you've been led to be quietly yourself, like a root growing wise in darkness, under the light litter, the falling words. And to be known, to be loved in the places where we're misunderstood and oppressed and hurt. And so I'll close with this morning. So I'm going to take a risk here. I risk losing half the room, but we're going to go for it. So this person I'm going to bring up is quite triggery. Don't show the picture yet, but... So we welcome all opinions and emotions of this person. Okay, you can show it now. You can show it. So I know we have a vast array of opinions. Okay, I'll tell you a secret. You can't tell anybody else. It's kind of embarrassing. I'm a Kanye apologist. I know, exactly. Okay, but if you disagree, you're totally allowed. I'll explain why I'm an apologist. So I don't agree with most of what he does or says. I don't agree with his political opinions. I don't even agree with his spiritual opinion. But there's something beautiful of a deeply flawed human for all the world to see. There's something to me very beautiful. But if you dislike him and have canceled him and don't like him, that's a very valid opinion, maybe more valid than my opinion. Okay, so all of it's welcome. So I think if you don't like him, it actually works even better. Because I'm going to play his song he wrote. And again, if you can't handle it, he wrote it with Paul McCartney. So, you know, we'll give him that. His mother died in 2007. And that's when actually he started a lot of his spiraling. And this song is written, it's words his mother used to say to him. So it's sung from his mother's perspective to him. And then he says through him to his daughter. And so he imagines putting himself to sleep and hearing what his mom is saying to him. And so a couple of words just for context. So Mari is Kanye's nickname. That's what his mom used to call him. So we hear Mari. That's his mom talking to him. Chosen one is what Kanye means in Ethiopian. And then at the end, they talk about Nori. Nori is the nickname for his daughter, North. But I think his mom was genuinely a loving mom. And he felt that. And he missed that. And so just receive these words from a person who had a parent that genuinely loved him.
As I lay me down to sleep, I hear her speak to me. Hello, Mari, how you doing? I think the storm and out of rain, the clouds are moving. I know you're happy, 'cause I can see it. So tell the voice inside your head to believe it. I talked to God about you. He said he sent you an angel. And look at all that he gave you. You asked for one and you got two. You know I never left you. 'Cause every road that leads to heaven's right beside you. So I can say, hello, my only one. Just like the morning sun, you keep on rising till the sky knows your name. Hello, my only one. Remember who you are. No, you're not perfect, but you're not your mistakes. Hey. Oh, the good outweighs the bad, even on your worst day. Remember I'd say, hey. One day you'll be the man you always knew you could be. And if you knew how proud I was, you'd never shed a tear, have a fear. No, you wouldn't do that. And no, I didn't pick the day to turn the page. I know it's not the end every time I see her face and I hear you say, hello, my only one. Remember, none. You got the world, 'cause you got love in your hands, and you're still my chosen one. So can you understand? One day you'll understand. So hear me out, hear me out. I won't go, I won't go. No goodbyes, no goodbyes. Just hello, just hello. And when you cry, I will cry. And when you smile, I will smile. And next time when I look in your eyes, we'll have wings and we'll fly. Oh, my only one. Just like the morning sun, you'll keep on rising till the sky knows your name. And you're still my chosen one. Remember who you are. No, you're not perfect, but you're not your mistakes. Hey. Tell Nori about me. Tell Nori. I just want you to do me a favor. Tell Nori about me. 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 Tell Nori